Mini episode 1800 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the great American radio show on Internet TV. As we first said 18 years ago, this is a welcome that we have for you to mini episode 1800 of the FDH Lounge. I am FDH managing partner Rick Morris, and I'm here with one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, Ben Chu. We are here to celebrate the show's 18th anniversary. We're taking a look at the second half of the 2020s since we have just begun them, taking a look in these three mini episodes at news, sports, and entertainment, the different areas here. Now, the FDH Lounge, of course, spun off from FantasyDraftHelp.com to become an all-topics show. On January 14th, 2007, lasting until June 28th, 2011, on the late-lamented Sports Talk Network with 152 episodes. And at that time, we spun off into podcasts, and we left video in the rearview mirror with the exception of, and just a couple of exceptions, just briefly, episode 153 for the 2023 Night 1 NFL Draft with the scout Ken Becks from FirstDownScouting.com. And then subsequently, a joint production with After Further Review with Jones later on that summer, reviewing a few episodes of Justified City Primeval. But now we're planting our flag. We're back on video, partially for now, increasingly so as we go along in 2025 and beyond. And of course, you will still find the audio for the show wherever you get your podcasts. And again, it's a true pleasure to come full circle with a great friend that I met at STN back in the day, back in the late 2000s. He was doing his own web TV shows there then. The great Ben Chu, everybody, our FDH Hoops analyst and FDH Lounge dignitary extraordinaire. Ben, thank you so much for being here for this special occasion, my friend.
Well, I appreciate it as always, Rick. And on top of that, now I think everyone can finally see what I look like for all these years.
You know? That's right. That's right. It is not a mystery anymore.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
And again, people might have forgotten what I look like from back in the day here. But now this is a thrust right into people's faces as it was previously. I still miss the old webcams back at Sports Talk Network. But again, for the show's anniversary, in recent years, we have had sort of a dedicated panel that we have put together, an eclectic group like many that you will find in the lounge. So my fellow original dignitary, Chris Galloway, John Adams, Ron Glasnap, and the Patron brothers, Anthony and Matt. Now, we deviated from that 2 years ago. Ben was nice enough to be here for that occasion because timing-wise, there is no way we could have put that panel together. It was pretty much the immediate aftermath of the passing of John's brother, Ron's very close friend, and my very close friend, longtime dignitary Dave Adams. So there was just no putting that panel together then. Ben was here then, and I'm not going to say it's exactly the same set of circumstances now, but right now, Anthony is battling a few health issues. Please keep him in your prayers, everybody. Looking forward to putting that panel together, hopefully in the spring, for doing another Pantheon segment here. Anthony, well enough to be here, as he said to me, and I know that he was, but I do not want to impose on him right now. And I'm dealing with a few things organizationally right now where I didn't have the wherewithal to put together a large panel. There's a decent amount of work that is involved in setting that up. Easier just to do it with one person under the circumstances that I'm dealing with. So very grateful to have Ben here. So it is great to have you here. And now we're going to talk about a couple of different subjects here, one at a time in our mini episodes, Ben. And again, you are somebody that I can talk to, regularly talk to off air on any number of subjects every week, like clockwork here. So we're just happening to film these ones today.
I know, yeah. Well, that's the only difference. To get in, dive into these subjects. So
yes, thank you.
We've had, I will say, a very interesting start to the decade, and probably going to have an even more interesting start to the second half of the decade.
Yeah. You just made me make my first of what will be many memeable faces when you said a very memorable start, because yes, it has been, and we're going to get to that. What I'm going to do here first is I'm going to take a moment to acknowledge the original FDH Lounge dignitaries. We first did our show January 14th, 2007. And as I always like to joke about, in the newsroom there, they had on the game, it was the Chargers and the Patriots playoff game that round. So as I always like to say, the football career of Marty Schottenheimer, the curtain was lowering on his career right as the curtain was raising on the FDH Lounge. So as he's walking into the locker room for what turns out to be his last game, we're going on the air and we're starting it all. And I want to take a moment here and just kind of shout out the original FDH Lounge dignitaries. And I'm going to start with my partner with FDH Enterprises, Jason Jones, our FDH senior editor. He is the proprietor of After Further Review with Jones, that great YouTube channel that is a content partner with FDH. That is a channel that he runs completely himself. He is our FDH lead NFL draft analyst. Chris Galloway, a member of the OU Mafia with a lot of us back in the day that ran in the political circles there. He's our lead NFL analyst. He's the co-host with Jason and I every year for our NFL draft review and preview shows. He is one of the smartest people that I've ever known, and I dubbed him about 2 years ago, I think, the FDH chief futurist, because he has a great interest in futurism, but many things as well. Very, very smart guy. Tim Faust, fellow co-host with me on the Life's a Pitch with Ken Detweiler show on the Sports Talk Network back in the day. So Tim, obviously a very huge baseball guy. He is the commissioner to this day of my keeper baseball league. And he is one of the steadiest, most centered people that I think I've ever known. Just a very, very, very steady aura, and nothing rattles that guy. He is just, it's a wonder to be around him in that sense. Somebody who's the exact opposite, it would be Nate Noy, our FDH chief of research. This is a guy, most raw brilliance of anyone I've ever known. He's probably got like a 300 IQ, super polarizing. Very polarizing as far as his opinions. The thing with being as smart as he is that he's always convinced that he's right and that he's like immediately right on something. So he's a very, very entertaining guy. And then that brings us to Burrell Jackson, another member of the OU Mafia with Chris and myself back in the day in those political circles, along with Nate, the most colorful person I've ever known, the most charismatic person I've ever known, hands down. A guy who's very entertaining, not just with punchlines, but consistently funny, and consistently funny without even trying. Very gifted debater, argues politics and anything else under the sun, except for sports. Oddly enough, not much of a sports fan, but very super entertaining guy. Now, like anybody that's that interesting, like anybody that's that big of a force of nature, he can burn hot, and he will run hot and cold with people at various points in time. I myself found myself on the wrong end of that twice. One time, years before the show, we had a misunderstanding and it escalated. And the next thing you know, as my best friend is standing there very bemused, we have a large screaming match going on in the concourse of McCarran International Airport in Las Vegas as people are just passing by and hearing us yell all of these sadly personal things at one another. But that one got out of hand. So didn't talk for quite a period of time. He reached out to me when my mother passed away. He was very saddened by that. And anything having to do with any kind of concern for my mother always really warms my heart. So that helped us kind of put that behind us. Subsequently, the show starts sometime thereafter. He's a part of it. Time number two of having an incident came in 2009. And much like the previous time, there was something where there was a misunderstanding, and it was my fault. It really was. And I went to apologize. And this time in particular, it was a thing of like, oh, you know what you did. You know what you did. So it was a thing of like that I was lying about there being a misunderstanding. And I'm the kind of guy where I don't take that well if there's any kind of inference or stronger statement about me being a liar. So that was that. And that's why you haven't heard him on the show over this period of time since then. And the kindest interpretation for me would be that, you know, didn't know how to break through. I don't know how you sort of make things right after something like that. But I'm the kind of guy, we believe in accountability on this show. And I'm the kind of guy where, I mean, look, I've taken on a lot of big challenges. Got to be, you know, on the board of a very distressed HOA, subsequently president of that. Subsequently, it's no longer distressed, by the way. But I've taken on challenges with that and writing and content creation like what you're seeing here. So I've embraced a lot of challenges. I just didn't embrace that challenge of trying to see if we could make things right. So we have the return to video coming up, the 18th anniversary. The storybook thing to say under the circumstances is I found a way. I reached out this past week, talked to them. We put it behind us in some form or fashion. And that's one of these things where Ben, I'm just going to bring you back on here for a second. It's one of those things where you're very good at following where I'm going with something. If I'm to tell you that it was the worst possible alternative to that, the worst, you got a feeling where I'm going with this?
I don't, Rick. I feel like you have the ability now to tell everyone.
Okay. I'm going to do you a favor, take you off camera because this is going to be jarring. So I don't want anybody to see your face until you've had a chance to prepare for this. So instead of that being the case, instead of it occurring to me to reach out, instead, this past Tuesday afternoon, I get a text from Chris Galloway informing me that back in November, the word has just gotten out this past week, but back in November, Burrell passed away. So that was one of those things where, again, just a very devastating thing to have, you know, be the case, you know, as I learned that about Burrell. And so, you know, it's kind of a lesson to me that I think that, like, even if you are in the right on something like that, is it worth, you know, when you look at the balance of an entire friendship, you know, I kind of let that outweigh the friendship. Don't know what would have happened if I had reached out, could have gotten thrown back in my face, but I wasn't willing to risk it. So, you know, that's on me and I got to own that one. And maybe that can be an example for anybody else that's checking this out. But beyond that, I want to celebrate Burrell's contributions to the show. Because again, I mean, the standout personality in the early days of the show. There's a Facebook thread that I've seen this past week where people are chiming in a lot of memories from back in the day. And just everything in there just paints him as being so much larger than life. I go back to the day when the whole thing with, they would do a thing with the school newspaper. Where when you were on it, I was on the sports staff. They would run a little thing with some of your more colorful quotes from around the newsroom. And one of the only ones I remember is me saying, "I'm going to watch Burrell wrestle a bear." And it didn't happen. I think the event got canceled. But it's like, if anybody's reading this thread, if they just stumble upon it, like, did somebody like this actually exist? This seems like it's made up. Did it actually exist? It did. Everything happened as it's being said. He did actually exist, larger than life. And while this is awful that this happened to him, he was taken too soon, he at least gets to be remembered for being so much larger than life. So RIP to one of the all-time greats. So I'm going to bring it back in there, Ben. So yeah, it just heck of a coincidence on finding that out this week that this ends up being the case here. But, you know, it doesn't change other than the personal aspects that I'm mentioning between me and him. It doesn't change anything I was going to say about him anyways, because he always was a standout personality with the show. So anything that you take away from all of that?
I think that you guys have had a huge line of dignitaries, and at the end of the day, too, is that everyone is great people, and all we need to learn at the end of the day is, you know, it's always better to have words of encouragement and things that we can discuss with individuals, and never leave anything unsaid if we've learned anything over these last couple of years, especially after the pandemic. So
yeah,
I like to say it, Godspeed.
Godspeed to him. And that's one of those things where, and again, as somebody who legitimately, you know, in neither instance, but especially the second one, which got was way more contentious, you know, didn't mean to hurt his feelings. Just it was, you know, the thing that, you know, kind of went off the rails there, that it never really occurred to me this week. But like being right on something can sometimes be a trap. Because I was right in that I, and my apology, I always felt like should have been accepted and it should have been something we were able to put behind us. But that's a thing where, you know, it then becomes, if that becomes the last word in what had been a friendship there, then you're letting it in a sense kind of outweigh that. And that's a perspective I never had before this week. So, you know, to simultaneously be justified in, you know, what I was feeling at the time and everything like that, and then to let that be the last word. And that's a dichotomy that just hadn't occurred to me before. So, you know, something I've learned from. So, I mean, I think that's, and again, just, yeah, he will never, ever, ever be forgotten. Burrell Antonio Jackson, one of the all-time greats. And I picked the news segment to do first because anything where he would be mentioned, I think he would have been like, what are you doing? Doing a sports segment on here? I was never big into sports. Why would you lead with sports? So I'm going to segue from him into the news. And so we're just going to kind of take a look at a few things that we think in terms of national and world news, things that may be different over the course of the next half decade, which we've just begun, things that might be the same. And there's one thing that I want to start with, and you kind of alluded to that before, Ben, and that is as far as the way that this half decade has started. So I go back to the 13th anniversary show in 2020. We were doing a preview of the entire decade. And I hate to say it, by the way, I'm closest to the mark on a lot of what I was saying because I was sort of the token dystopian on the panel. I was just saying, I see bad things happening in a lot of ways. And, you know, large wars, potentially assassinations. I just think a lot of stuff's going to go off the rails. Now, little did I know the exact shape of that. But COVID wasn't yet on our radar in mid-January 2020. It might have come up in terms of like, hey, there's been this thing overseas, but probably not even. 6 weeks later, we go to do our February 29th time capsule. Myself, Nate Noy, Chris Galloway. We do this February 29th to February 29th every 4 years. And I will say, you listen to that one. It was recorded February 27th. And thanks in large part to Chris Galloway, our chief futurist, we were talking a little bit about COVID. We're making all these predictions for the next 4 years in terms of, you know, news headlines and things like that. And we're saying we might have to put an asterisk on this because there's something coming and it might kind of change a lot of this stuff. We gave ourselves an out. So by 6 weeks later, we'd seen that it might color that. And that's where I'm looking at the way that this year has started. And I wonder, nothing's going to be probably on the magnitude of COVID, but the way the year started with the terrorism or whatever you want to call the motivations for it, but it was terrorism in New Orleans, attempted so in Las Vegas. In terms of a thought that that could be a wave. There's been predicted, I think Sarah Evans, CIA former analyst who was prominent on social media. I've come across a lot of her stuff. She'd forecast a lot of domestic terrorism. Not domestic in the sense that American groups, but unless it's homegrown type of ISIS type stuff. But basically, that type of terrorism making a big resurgence in the States in 2025. So if you listen to her, then what we saw there is just the first manifestations of it. The LA fires, this being a thing where this is one of the largest urban disasters, I think, clearly in American history. I mean, I go back to Katrina in 2005, and you're looking at a city that got wiped out, but New Orleans is nowhere near as big as greater LA. Very few things are in North America. So I don't know, like, have we seen anything yet? Any of these big things that weren't on our radar on December 31st, but now they are. Do you think they have a chance to really kind of hang over us a good part of the rest of the decade?
I mean, it's going to be a really interesting scenario just in terms of a geopolitical narrative, just with everything going on. And it feels like, I don't want to make any comparisons to COVID, but I do feel like there is a scenario where there's a lot of overall just views of the world right now where we seem so insular, but we aren't. It's more grander than that. And I feel like right now with just, you know, this decade so far has been chaos on some level. So it's not surprising that we'd have a year to start out like this. And it's going to be really interesting to see in terms of world leadership, whether you're talking about Donald Trump, if you're talking about overseas in Korea during also their president getting impeached as well. So it's going to be really, it's going to be interesting, but also at the same point too, I think, again, I am not an analyst in terms of geopolitical and terrorism, but I do think there will be we're going to probably see some of this, these instances occur more often, but it also has to be apparent that we also have, at least in America, some of the greatest government agencies that can help thwart some of these issues. And overall, too, it's just, it's a very chaotic start to a year. But sometimes we always have seen, too, Rick, chaos can start to begin, but then it can also dissipate from there as well.
It can. And that's one of the things, too, where coming into the year, we were seeing a couple of different indicators of, if you look at, say, the Ukraine war, there were sort of contradictory things here of where, because both sides could say that things are going well in one area, but poorly in other areas. And it's a matter of, you know, what outweighs what as far as the considerations on either side. But there was a general sense, and particularly with Trump coming in, focused on trying to get a deal done, that there may very well be a deal, or at least a strong push for a deal sometime earlier in the year in the Middle East. Because again, we were looking at 2024, and it was really looking like both of the situations could have really spilled over, and we might be potentially looking at world war. In the Middle East, I mean, one of the things I don't think anybody really could have seen coming was that the way that it's gone with Israel, with the degree to which they've taken out Hamas, the degree to which they've taken out Hezbollah, that Syria ended up collapsing. I mean, nobody saw that coming. Literally nobody saw it. If you said you saw it coming, you were a liar. So it's a thing now where you've got Iran's whole bunch of proxies there, and they're kind of on their back feet. So it's a situation where in both places, on the paper, it doesn't necessarily look as dangerous as it did a couple of months ago, because a lot of the things that were making it as volatile as it was, you know, at that point in time, you know, have been altered and maybe to some strong degree. But this is one of these things where you look at history, and sometimes when you're on the verge of getting peace, sometimes that's what can trigger wider wars. Hopes get up for peace, it doesn't happen, and then things can get worse. So it's one of those things where right now it doesn't seem like, I don't think there's any way just on paper that there's the threat for world war that there was 6 months ago, or however far back you want to go. But it's one of those things where if hopes for peace are unrealized, hopefully it doesn't spill into that.
Right. And I tend to be in these sort of scenarios of world war is very unlikely in most cases, just because we have if you look through the history of those sort of scenarios, there was very distinct grabs of power in it. At this point, it still seems very internal. Like we aren't seeing a scenario where there are that many dictatorships at this point that are deciding to go outside of their own existence at this time.
Right.
But I would also make the argument too that we're going to see, at least on the world political level, there's going to be a lot more. There is going to be a lot more in terms of, we're going to see a bunch of different presidents in a bunch of different countries over the next couple of years, and prime ministers. And then we're also going to have to determine, well, if the world economy does not improve over a period of time, then we're going to see then people deciding to cast their votes differently, or depending on whether you're in a oligarch dictatorship, any sort of scenario along those lines, where it seems like the world political stage is a lot different than when we started in early 2020. It seemed like right now there's a little bit of turnover in a bunch of nations just overall. So it's going to be very interesting to see how that's going to impact the wider view. But I just don't like to think we exist in a world right now where we're capable of a WW3. But
right.
Again,
right.
You can never fully say that it isn't impossible.
Oh, exactly. And it's, for me, it all comes down to, like, if Putin is completely cornered, like, let's say there's like a threat of a coup or anything like that, or if he thinks he's going to die anyways, is he the kind of guy that might, you know, want to take the rest of the world with him? That's what we're all focused on, rational actors and everything like that. And like, we've evolved to a world where institutions will keep it from happening. Yeah, until there's one guy that decides he's got nothing left to lose. And a couple of them have, you know, had their fingers on the trigger of the nukes at various points in time along the way. To what you said about changes in governments, we saw a lot of changes in governments in 2024. The UK was the one place that was the exception to the rule, where they ended up going somewhat to the left. because of dissatisfaction with the longstanding Tory government there. Other places, and again, it was sort of a commonality across the Western world. Inflation was a big deal because you talked about that as far as if things get better or not. And there is an increasing sentiment about immigration in different places. And in a lot of cases, I think particularly the hot button is illegal immigration. What do you do with it? With European countries, a lot of times it's about the boats that are coming in. With Australia, that's the case as well. Here in the United States, a focus on the southern border. And I'm hearing increasingly a little bit about the northern border as well, which is never anything that you really hear about being secured all that well. So you got a lot of different things here where that people have been pretty fired up about, voted for change in 2024 in a lot of different places. And again, a lot of, you know, hopes are high in a lot of these kind of areas that we're going to get a turnaround on that kind of stuff. Hopefully inflation to kind of come down. The whole thing is, too, guys like me and you know this. A lot of people, unfortunately, don't. Like, I want prices to be back where they were before all this. No, you don't, because if we go through like a massive deflation, that's almost like a depression kind of a situation. You get that kind of a money reset, and there's a lot of pain and pretty much peeing blood before we get there. So that's never going to happen. But as far as making things more affordable again, that's kind of the key to a lot of this kind of stuff, because I think that's where, again, when people feel like things are completely out of control, it's the affordability of goods and services that hits them the most.
Right. And I would argue the biggest political story of the first 4 months, the first 4 years of this decade is the economy.
Yeah.
It's seeing how the world economy has expanded. And on top of that, at least speaking in the United States, how inflation impacted a lot of people. It had a definite impact on the election as well. It had to have been among the top five things on a lot of people's mind. And it feels like, to me at least, the economy, the world economy is going to be one of these underlying themes for the next couple of years. Because if we start to see prices increase, potential tariffs, regions of the world that are just still being developed, there is going to be discussion in terms of, will there be scenarios where goods will be produced by other countries? What's the price of oil going to be in the Middle East? Like, what? There's so many factors, but I feel like a lot of times too, we boil it down to our state, our nation, instead of what we really should be looking at is just the grander picture that the world economy is very healthy in one respect, but also we've seen wealth gaps since the early 1900s that are just absolutely insane.
They are. And that's what fuels a lot of this dissatisfaction. And, you know, and I'm going to make this next point by first noting that, you know, one of the things that has changed through the course of the FDH Lounge lineage is that if you go back to the early days of the show, when I still basically was able to hang on to enough sort of, you know, idealism to still have, you know, that whole kind of, you know, paleocon Pat thing going on here. I have basically at a certain point here, as I've said on the show, converted to nihilism. Like I've given up believing that anything is going to get better. And I have things I'd like to see happen, but I just, like that'll ever happen. That's kind of where I'm at. And I will say, as part of this, one of the things that's maybe making me question this a bit is that I'm somebody where what I've seen happening, again, not something that I've been thrilled about, you know, by and large, although, like I said, I try not to let things get to me like this as much as I used to. I talked about this on our 2024 post-election show when I was talking about the entire, you know, swing towards, and again, for as much as, again, and everybody, and I have to say this, and I have a lot of friends and fellow travelers on the right that aren't going to like me saying the way, you know, that, you know, the whole woke thing has sort of really become a cliche, but let's just call it, for lack of a better term here, but that entire push over the course of the last decade plus in this country. And I really thought that it was irretrievable. I really, really, really think, okay, that's the way it's going. And you look at the election this year, and I said on the post-election show, it reminds me a lot of 1980, which people focus on, you know, Reagan and the rise of him and whatever. But I said on the show, I said, less interesting to me, this is where I'm different than the rest of the world. I said, less interesting to me than Trump is what happens to the Democrats now. because they have to question everything, because everything looked like it was swinging their way. But then when you look at the way that the economy went with inflation, when you looked at, Trump was able to exploit, you know, a backlash on the trans kids stuff here and, you know, surgery for minors and stuff like that. I remember seeing those commercials thinking that's a political loser. Boy, was I wrong. I was really, really wrong. So it's one of those things where it reminds me of 1980 is not so much the Reagan part of it, but that 1980 was sort of a backlash to everything that had happened since the 60s and how far the pendulum had swung in the one direction. And there was just, and Jimmy Carter seemed to be, and RIP Jimmy Carter, as we just laid him to rest, but, you know, that's what it was. He was seen as sort of the personification of everything that had gone wrong, everything that had swung too far in the one direction or whatever. So that's what's interesting to me. And that's what's happened, I think, again, in a lot of these countries that voted the way they voted in 2024. And that is something that I don't think a lot of people saw coming. And I think that's why it's been so jarring since the election and with Trump having, you know, swept all the swing states and everything like that, that this is indicative of there's been a realignment that's been happening in this country. And for as closely as I follow things, even I missed it. And you see the bafflement on TV with a lot of the analysts, they missed it too. So we've got this sort of rolling realignment that's going on in our country that I think is continuing to shake out.
And my thing too, Rick, is I tend to disagree with that.
Okay.
But what I do agree with is in an example of the 1980s. What was one of the biggest things under that whole timeline was the war on drugs.
Yeah.
And now we flash forward to this period of timeline. We discussed in the early 2020s of police brutality, Black Lives Matter. And now we're also now dealing with issues with the economy now. And right. I feel like we've discussed this before, is that we've essentially seen the all-star gamification of the political system in America, where essentially everyone becomes issue voters.
Yes.
And at least, again, there is so much data out there and there's so much analysis that we can never truly know how everyone votes at the end. But one thing that we did see, at least during Trump's reelection, was the economy was big for a lot of people. And the big thing was is that it felt like, to me, at least on a visual level, that the Democratic Party was trying to figure out who their candidate was. And that was really something that did impact the election. And at the end of the day, the real question, I think, if you're bringing it back to the Democrats, is where do they kind of go from here? Because you have to go one of two ways, at least in the political spectrum. You either have to get someone very similar to Trump to offset that scenario, or you have to go to someone so moderate that they appeal to more people in general.
Sure.
And I think, too, the question, too, is that issue voters, it's going to come down to money for them, and it's going to be money. And I think mostly, at least what we saw from the reelection of Donald Trump was, it was clearly for most Americans about money.
Right.
It didn't really come down to any other major things going on. I'm just being honest, because if you looked at just the raw data of how voters tended to vote in these regions, it doesn't surprise me that there are scenarios where people were voting because they preferred the economy under Donald Trump during his first term.
Well, you know, and this is one of these things where what I say now is going to go against something that I've quoted previously on the show. I don't remember what the exact origins of this phrase are. I think it was named after a political philosopher, but Mickey Kaus, who's a very sharp observer, had coined the filer faster theory or thesis, that like everything happens so much faster, you don't even have time to digest it, whatever. So what I'm about to say sort of flies in the face of that, because I look at this, and like I said, I'm a lot more fascinated by the Democrats right now, because I look at it and it's like, I don't think there's any way by 2028 they get this figured out, and maybe even 2032. Reason being, how'd they do this the last time? In the wake of the whole cycle the last time, how'd they do it? The Democratic Leadership Council, Bill Clinton was very much involved in that. By 1992, they had convinced people that they were a safe hand at the tiller. You can trust us now. You know, it helped that there was no more Soviet Union at that time, so you don't have to worry about them, you know, being squishy on foreign policy as much. But it's a thing where now, you know, like you look at the counterbalances at the time. You had these old decrepit unions. Like who was the DLC shoving out of the way at that point in time versus today, the interest groups that are there? You know, you think there's going to be any, you know, sense of like, hey, we need to, you know, moderate what our tone is on this social issue or that social issue or whatever. It's going to be, how dare you? So it looks like a Chinese finger trap to me right now. I don't know how they get out of it, you know, without a lot of, you know, figurative bloodshed between here and there, because you have, you know, there's the moderates and the pragmatists that want to speak to the concerns that people have, but you have the issue-oriented people who, these are the same ones that were giving wet willies to all the candidates here. The whole thing where in 2019, when Kamala was running for president, when she filled out the thing like, why, yes, I do believe in doing, you know, gender reassignment surgeries for prisoners for free. She got bullied into that by the interest groups. So are those interest groups going to be like, yeah, maybe we need to back off on that? I just don't see it happening. So the two sides, how that plays out to me is just endlessly interesting.
I think the bigger question ultimately too is for the Democratic Party. It's just trying to decide what they want to be, because I feel like in the last two election cycles that they lost, they weren't really definitive about where they really stood at the end of the day. Like it was very, we don't want Donald Trump to win the election.
Yeah.
When it should probably have been the opposite, which is why should our candidate win the election? At that period of time. And I mean, the big question ultimately is going to be asked is, do financial interest groups have too much power in America?
Yeah.
With the rise of super PACs, we've seen a lot on both sides of the aisle of a lot of scenarios too. And it only has so far kind of proven that, again, to go back to the whole all-star gamification, everyone votes based off of their own personal needs instead of the needs of the greater good of the society. Period.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's what makes us human at the end of the day. But the real question is that the question is ultimately going to be is for the Democrats, is there a way that you can regain some of these voters who were essentially voting for Donald Trump because they wanted a good economy? And it's going to really come down to that at the period of time.
Yeah, I think so. And that's where, again, and, you know, if the economy is not doing so well, maybe the Democrats do well in the midterms. They might possibly hope that that might carry over to 2028. But at the end of the day, it's going to have to be about getting people to vote for them as opposed to against Trump and any of the other stuff. And basically what that looks like, what are the things that they coalesce behind? And it's a thing where, again, you know, I was having this discussion off air with Chris Galloway recently. We were talking about this and saying that, like, the thing about saying that, you know, oh, the Democrats could be down for many, many cycles well into the future. Well, I remember after 2008, all these things out there, and there were books that were like the emerging Democratic permanent majority, that like after George W. Bush, the Republican Party was just, you know, kaput. And it's a thing where, again, they flipped the House in 2 years, flipped the presidency in 8. But it ends up being a guy who had completely repudiated a lot of Bush's stuff, especially on foreign policy. They ran a Bush clone in 2012, which I was screaming all year long on this show, including me at the 5th anniversary show. Don't do it. Don't do it. They ran Mitt Romney, went down in flames. It took veering away from him to make it happen. And whatever the Democrats do from here on in, I think we would agree, whatever they do, it won't be as dramatic a flip from Obama, Biden, Kamala. It won't be as dramatic as the move from that to whatever as it was from Bush to Trump, because Bush and Trump are so diametrically opposed in a lot of ways, albeit in ways that I know a lot of people, I have a lot of friends that have been fanboys from both of both of them that never reconcile the contradictions. They just went right from one to the other.
I feel like the most fascinating part, that's why I called the political theory the all-star gamification, is that
yes.
You can explain away any issue for any yes. candidate, whatever the reason, you can always explain it away. And that's why we find it so fascinating.
Yeah.
Just in the political spectrum in America right now, it really went from, I think, in the 80s and 90s to we're voting for a candidate to now we're shifting to we're voting for who we like a little bit more than the other.
Right. Yeah, I think that's what it comes down to. And ultimately, seeing how that shakes out and what shade of blue the Democrats end up getting behind in the next couple of years, that to me is one of the most interesting news stories to keep following here. I know in our subsequent too many episodes here, we're going to be talking about this as well. The one thing that looms over all of this, all three of the subjects today are AI. You go back to 2023 in particular, the huge breakthrough year with ChatGPT and all the different manifestations that have come since then. As we've noted on the show, 2024, a little bit slower for developments, but you're not going to have, just exponential increases year over year in this. But as far as all of the things that are going to make the world look so much different at the end of the decade than it looks now, I mean, if that's not number one or number two on the list, I don't know what would be.
I know. I feel like it's going to be one of the bigger deals just across the board. We saw the rise of NVIDIA under Jensen Huang. Mm-hmm. We also saw Microsoft's increasing power in the Silicon Forest area in Seattle. We also, on top of that, too, we're seeing incredible abilities with Sam Altman and OpenAI. We've also seen Google enter the fray with Sora. And just what the impacts of everything is, there's going to be a lot of positives that come out of it. But then also we saw, we'll probably talk about this in the entertainment or the sports section of these mini episodes, is AI makes life a lot easier for a lot of people. And the question is going to come down to is, well, if AI can do the job, why do we need another human doing the job? So it's going to be really interesting. And we discussed this too, the actor strike in Hollywood. This was a precursor because of that. Mm-hmm. And what we've seen so far, I mean, we might not see the strides that we've seen over the last couple of years, but it is still very apparent. And it right now is clearly the biggest story, at least in the world political sense at this time. Because we're also seeing too, with Facebook's decision to remove some of their standards and practices. And then also on top of that too, the bigger shift of misinformation that's probably going to come out, and then having people having to do comment moderation and all that's going to be very interesting to see how the social media echo chambers that we all live in kind of impact our world.
Right.
Forward.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I will say too, that somebody that's been in the news recently for being, one of the, strongest, again, to use the cliche term, anti-woke folks out there. Now in Hollywood, Justine Bateman, before she was talking about this, one of the big hot buttons she was talking about, she was on the front lines of the whole the labor situation out there in Hollywood with the AI stuff. And I had this under the notes for entertainment, but I'm going to get to this now since you mentioned it, because this is one of these things where when you're looking at how the world can be different, I mean, I've sort of half joked about this. Like, you know who the biggest box office actor of the 2030s is going to be? James Dean. But, like, we could be living in that kind of a world.
I mean, we're getting very, very close, Rick, to what we've seen so far with AI video prompts. We're getting close. It's not fully there yet, but we've seen the dramatic change in 4 years. And it would not shock me that, and I'll, we'll probably touch more on this in the entertainment, but we were not that far off until of like AI looking like a third grader or a fourth grader created this to now, like there is enough instances that we can look at images or movies where you have to ask the question, is it AI or not?
Yeah, there was one of these ones, and I'm not going to mention what video service it is, because I don't want to put them on blast, but there was one of these ones that I had subscribed to. I think it was last year. Cause I was looking to try to put together. So for a writing project that I'm trying to peddle here, I was like, let's see if I can put together like a teaser reel for this just off of AI. And I tried to do that, and it was the worst, crappiest type of, if I was to tell you that, let's just say that this story here, this is something set in older times, shall we say. And one of the video prompts that ended up coming up in here for one of these scenes, it brings up a very modern looking, Asian looking gentleman in here. And I'm like, this doesn't look like something from a long time ago in America, So it can only process so much at this point. Yeah. So, like I said, I'm not mentioning the one that I did, but I very quickly unsubscribed on that one. I'm like, I'm not paying anymore for this stuff. So this is something where, but again, content creators are figuring it out. But again, in the political landscape, it's going to be an interesting thing to see how it plays out. And again, the incoming Trump administration, to a large extent, it looks like it's going to be relatively hands-off on this kind of stuff. So what does that look like in that kind of a sense? And since we're talking about Hollywood and since we're talking about, you know, that area here, just to bring it all full circle for the segment here, when I talked about things that may sort of overlay things for the decade here, that I'm getting the one thing that I'm kind of getting the sense of is that the LA fires, where that may tie into some of the other things we've talked about, these LA fires, is that there has been just a revulsion across the board to the kind of governance that we see in California here, to some of the environmental regulations that got in the way of this, you know, fire hydrants didn't have water in them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So to some of the political trends that have appeared to be sort of congealing leading up to this election and then coming out of this election, the degree to which that's sort of fueled, no pun intended, by what we're seeing in California and what looks like the failure of that brand of governance. It will be interesting to see if that just, you know, pushes things further in the direction of revolting against, you know, the Gavin Newsom type stuff that it seemed like we were already heading towards before this. I don't know.
I mean, it's tough to truly know. Mm-hmm. And again, we live in a 24/7, 365 news yes. cycle. So anything even mentioned will probably be forgotten at a period of time anyway. It's
could just, be.
It's a tough situation for any scenario. But again, there was, at least in the case of the government in the county and the mayor is responsible for this, is that there was budget cuts to the fire department. You also have to discuss too, like, most of the water in California is owned by a specific family. So that also has to place some level of a, you know, narrative on a period of time. But I mean, it's going to be really interesting. Again, I feel like we're reaching very similarly back into like the 50s of the haves and the have nots. And it's going to be really interesting to see is that we're either going to see a big swing and seeing that sort of futurism of the 50s going more forward, or we could be heading our way back to an older 1920s timeline where there's going to be a boom for a lot of people and bust for a lot of others.
Well, you know, and for what we're talking about here with California and some of the interests out there, a show that while it was only a couple of years ago, this particular season was well ahead of its time. Season 3 of Goliath, Billy Bob Thornton's lawyer in a big fight against this family that basically controlled an almond empire in California and was diverting a lot of water to their almond empire. And so that's a show that, you know, that season was probably at least 5-6 years ago, but does feel like it was kind of ripped from the headlines with what we're seeing right now. So the one question, I will put you on the spot here at the end, Ben, with a yes or no answer. When we go to do the anniversary show in 2030, will we be in a world where there's 53 stars on the American flag, a new one for Greenland, Canada, and the Panama Canal? Will we be seeing that?
The only answer to that question is what?
Yeah.
The answer is what?
Yes. Well, it is, as we say, a hot button topic from today's headlines. But we'll see how all that plays out here, too. Whether the fact that we're actually doing this show prior to the inauguration of the new/old administration it kind of leaves a lot to be speculated here. But it's been great speculating with you, Ben Chu. I look forward to doing so on the next couple of topics. Thank you very much, Ben. And thank you, everybody, for being here for mini episode 1800 of the FDH Lounge.